Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. 60 million people tuned in to last night's presidential debate at the University of Denver. President Barack Obama and Mitt Romney responded to questions on domestic policy with a major focus on taxes, the economy, and health care. But the candidates were not asked to speak about the environment, the foreclosure crisis, reproductive rights, gay rights, immigration, education, gun laws, energy policy, or prisons. Third-party candidates were shut out of the debates, which are run by a private corporation, the Commission on Presidential Debates. It's financed by Anheuser-Busch, Southwest Airlines, and the International Bottled Water Association, among other corporations. So on today's Your Call, we want to get your reaction to last night's debate. A lot of analysts are on the airwaves this morning talking about who won, who was tough, and who had the best lines. We would really like to talk about the substance of the debate itself. What was your response? What do you think a good debate should look like and sound like? What do you think about the questions and the format? What questions would you have asked the candidates? And what do you think was missing? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. Over the course of the hour, we'll be joined by a number of writers and activists throughout the country. And joining us to kick it off is Mark Hertzgard. He's a fellow at the New America Foundation and the nation's environmental correspondent. He has covered climate change for 20 years and is the author of 6 books, most recently Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. Mark recently wrote a piece for The Nation called 10 Questions on Energy and the Environment Obama and Romney Should Answer at the Debate. And Mark joins us from the road in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Mark, welcome back to the show.
I'm always happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Rose.
We are always happy to have you, and we're also always happy to have Jody Jacobson. She is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, an online news site that focuses on reproductive issues and women's health. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Mark, let's start off with you. What was your overall assessment of last night's debate?
I think a clear win for Mr. Romney. I was very surprised. Where was Barack Obama last night? Also, where was the journalist who was supposed to be moderating this? Mm-hmm. I felt embarrassed for my profession to watch Jim Lehrer there just let both of these politicians walk over him. But I was very, very surprised that Barack Obama was so flat, did not ever really defend himself, much less make a strong case for his vision of government. It appeared that Romney had a very clear strategy going in, and he executed it well. You may not agree with the content of it, but there's a man up there on stage who had every opportunity to point out the many, many falsehoods and omissions in Governor Romney's point of view, and that's Barack Obama. And he really fumbled big time, I think. Never brought up anything like the 47% remark. Let Romney absurdly pose as a critic of Wall Street. Let pass this whole notion that Paul Ryan first introduced at the Republican convention about how Obama's going to cut Medicare by $716 billion. It's maybe a reflection of the fact that Mr. Obama has not been really pressed in a debate context in some years now. I'm not really sure. There are 2 more debates. We'll certainly get another chance to see these two candidates face off against each other. But I think you'd have to say that after last night, Romney certainly got the better of the engagement.
And that is the nation's environmental correspondent, Mark Hertzgard. Jody Jacobson, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with Mark, and what was your overall assessment?
I'd have to agree with everything that Mark just said. I was pretty much shocked that so many of Romney's false statements were left uncontested by the president. There were many opportunities, I felt, that were handed to the president on a silver platter to take on Mr. Romney, and I was just, I kept waiting for this to happen, and it didn't, which truly shocked me. you know, I also concur with what Mark said about Jim Lehrer's role. The whole thing, the more that I look at it, the more that I can't believe that this was sort of the first nationally televised presidential debate of this election, because it just was so wrong on so many levels. I'm really shocked. And I was left wondering, I know before the debate, there were some polls out there saying that, you know, independents didn't want to see the two criticizing each other, blah, blah, blah. And I was left wondering, you know, was it that some of the people in Obama's campaign staff told him to just sort of lay back really low? I couldn't figure out what had happened there. And so many issues of importance were not even brought up last night amidst all of the lies that Romney told about his own policies that weren't contested.
And what about, just Mark, just quickly, the overall format of the debate? I mean, I was kind of shocked as someone who moderates a lot of the proposition debates, because we have a lot of props coming up in California. Jim Lehrer would bring up an issue and just say, well, how do you both differ? I mean, he didn't bring one fact to the table. He was rarely focused. What are your thoughts on that? Why did he do that?
I think it's PBS-itis. I'm sorry to say that on a public broadcasting airwaves here, but Jim Lehrer has been sitting there at PBS all these years at the NewsHour, where they pride themselves on being able to get politicians from both sides of the aisle to come on and be on their show and give it the luster, the supposed luster of having big wigs in Washington. Well, the reason they keep coming on is because Jim Lehrer will never ask you a tough question, will never act like a real journalist. I found myself thinking as I was watching last night, boy, this is so different. My British colleagues would just really be shocked, because in Britain, journalists are expected to push on tough questions, not just ask these open-ended questions that, frankly, anyone who's been paying the least bit of attention to the campaign say would know the answers to. Mr. President, do you and Governor Romney have different views of government? Well, duh, of course they have different views of government.
Right.
Let's come in with a tough question. For example, you know, when Romney's saying this stuff about, you know, I'll never cut the military.
Right.
And Obama has said in advance of that Romney wants $2 trillion worth of money that the military hasn't even asked for. A real journalist, after the president said that, would have gone to Romney and said, Governor Romney, the president just said that you are asking for $2 trillion in military spending that the Pentagon itself hasn't requested. Are you doing that, or are you saying that the president is lying?
Right.
Now, that is a factual question that nevertheless puts the point directly on what has just been said and illuminates an apparent real difference between these two candidates. No journalist should be afraid to ask that. Either Lehrer was either afraid or too witless to ask that question. That guy needs to be retired.
Jody, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think to add to what Mark just said, I think there are two other elements to Lehrer's performance that I would put forth as possibilities, in total agreement with Mark. One is that, you know, there was a concerted effort by conservative radio hosts and others to kind of intimidate some of the moderators by, you know, sort of reverse psychology. They're going to be so liberal. They're going to be so liberal. And so, you know, some have suggested that many of the moderators then feel like they have to kind of show that they're not favoring anybody or ask hard questions. And then the second thing is, you know, I think there's a political element here, because the right has always been against PBS. And, you know, as Romney said, I'm going to cut you out. And, you know, I think there's this completely erroneous and disproven notion that if, you know, PBS folks just play nice, somehow they're going to change their mind. And no, that's not going to happen. There's a pretty radical agenda that includes getting rid of public broadcasting, among many other things.
So what would you change about it? What do you think would make a good debate? Mark, you would include pointed questions. What else would you change about this format?
I'd have a real journalist on the stage. I would, which would sort of get to the pointed questions aspect. And I understand, to be fair for a second to Mr. Lehrer, you know, the idea of letting the two candidates go back and forth, there's a certain value to that. But in that case, let's get them out from behind those podiums. Let's sit them down. around a table so that it really is an opportunity for them to engage and to, you know, when necessary, politely interrupt one another so that you really do get a sense of that person. I think that another thing that I would do is to involve the public, but in a real way, to let the public pose some of these questions and to then have somebody up on the stage, a moderator, who is prepared to cut in, again, politely to either one of the two candidates and say, "No, sir, we need the answer to the question, not your talking point, the answer to the question." A journalist can do that. It's not, it ain't rocket science.
Right. Jody, what would you change? What would make an actual good debate?
Well, again, I think Mark is right. I absolutely think we're in a different era where having sort of, you know, one, and I'm sorry, but, you know, sort of tired-looking moderator and very meek moderator sitting there at a presidential debate no longer is okay, especially with all of the things that are at stake right now in the world and in this country. So, yes, I would have added definitely a hard-hitting journalist, not to favor one side or the other, but to ask hard questions and follow up. Even if you allow people to answer a question and you allow them to debate themselves, somebody's got to be there to do follow-up and take them, you know, to their word and ask them more pointed questions. And secondly, I would also have introduced an element of the public. I think, too, that, you know, the Commission on Elections is a not very transparent organization. And how they came to choosing these different moderators, that there had to be a push to get a woman moderator who's, you know, only on the town hall. These kinds of things, I think, really need to be discussed in light of this failed debate.
Well, I want to read a couple of emails. Chuck in Foster City says, "Mitt Romney repeated the same 3 or 4 general statements over and over, not using the time allotted to him to provide more substance and specifics." He also writes, "I've reviewed several fact-checking reports, and it's clear that Romney smeared the facts again and again. Sadly, Obama did not fight back." Denise in San Francisco says, "The president's rhetoric does not match his actions. In his first 2 years, he had both houses of Congress, yet did little or nothing on the many promises he made as a candidate. What makes us think he'll follow through with promises he did not keep the first go-around? Some of those same promises are being repeated for the second time. For example, the president was critical of the health insurance companies while at the same time empowering the very same insurance companies under Obamacare." And you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or give us a call at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. What did you think of last night's debate? What was your reaction? What do you think a good debate would sound like and look like? What did you think of the questions? And what would you have asked the candidate? So we're also getting a few emails about third parties. Mark, would you include third parties if you were to moderate a debate?
You know, it's a good question there. I'm here in Tampa, Florida, doing on a reporting trip, and at the restaurant where I was last night watching this, there were two guys at the bar as it was just about to begin, and I they were strangers, and I overheard their conversation, and the one guy says to the other guy, as the, you saw the split screen, there was Obama on one side and Romney on the other side, and the guy says, "Hey, do you see an independent candidate up there? Because, you know, I don't see one up there. It's just, you know, one and two, and where's the independent candidate who speaks for me?" You know, and at this point in American history, it's about a third of the American potential electorate that self-identifies as independent, as outside of the Democratic and Republican parties. Now, so clearly there is a public appetite for this. It's another question of how you incorporate that into the debates, because the nature of our system, rightly or wrongly, and I think there's a lot of weaknesses to it, the nature of our system makes it virtually impossible for any third-party candidate, such as the Green Party candidate Jill Stein this year or the Justice Party candidate Rocky Anderson and Ralph Nader in the past, it's pretty much impossible for them to not only qualify for all the ballots, but to really mount a campaign that has any chance of actually winning power. And so given that, And you can disagree with that, and I have disagreed with that in print, but given that reality, at this point, 5 weeks from Election Day, how do you incorporate a third party candidacy in there? I frankly would not favor putting forward somebody like Jill Stein, even though a lot of what she says makes a lot of sense, but there's not the kind of demonstrated public support for that point of view that you would expect to would be required to put somebody up there like that.
It sure would stir things up because Democracy Now! Paused last night after the first question, and then she did have Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein respond. The Libertarian wasn't available, but wow, watching that, you just realized it would completely change the entire feel of the room. Jody, what are your thoughts on that just quickly?
You know, I think if there were, in fact, a legitimate independent candidate, they should have been on the stage. But I don't think that that really resolves the issue of the fact that we have two parties that themselves are not being held accountable in these debates.
Well, we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. First of all, Romney was really rude from get-go. He walked all over the moderator. He didn't abide by the rules. And nobody is commenting on that, I'm sorry to say. And the other thing is, I think we're expecting too much on this debate deciding the presidency. I mean, we should be voting for the person's philosophy, life, background, and everything. That's not what this show was about. So I think this is bogus. This is some kind of trick to change the feeling of the American electorate to be determining presidency on a show, a one-hour show, whatever it was. The other thing is, Romney was fast and loose with the facts. That's why he looked smoother. Mm-hmm. He didn't pay attention to the facts. Obama, I think, was very careful. He was minding facts. When you do that, you're going to slow down and look wooden. And but, I mean, he had a whole lot of things he could have came back at Romney, but I don't think he was listening to him. Mm. That's my impression.
Well, thank you for calling in. Let's take a few more calls, and then we'll get reaction. Let's hear from John in Santa Cruz. Hi, John.
Hi there. Thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Personally, I think it's a mistake to think of this actually as a debate, just like the convention was a mistake to think of it as actual conventions. They were just, seems like it's smarter to think of it as an opportunity for them to give more speeches, particularly targeted at the swing state things, you know, and I think it's very likely that, like one of your guests said, that Obama's performance was, you know, scripted, you know, designed by his advisors to reach out to whoever they thought were the swing state people and that kind of thing. And it's like the League of Women Voters used to run the debate back in the 80s, and they quit in disgust, saying, if we continue to do this debate format as the Democrats and Republicans have demanded we do, it would amount to a fraud against the American people, so we can't do it anymore.
Yeah, there's a good video going around online about the history of these debates and why they changed, and I'll put that up on our website right after the show. What do you think would make a good debate?
Well, I think a moderator that would ask them, like your other guest said, moderator would ask them specific questions and say, hey, I'm going to nail you on this question. You can't, I'm not just going to let you pivot into whatever you want to go on about, but I want to, you know, I want to know the answer. And I do think that third party candidates would be good, even if they have zero chance of winning the election, just to bring in those perspectives and make it not look like the entire spectrum is the Democrats and the Republicans, to say, you know, hey, what about this? You know, bring up things. They would bring up issues that the Democrats and Republicans would never want to bring up.
Right, and they also make them look very, very similar. Well, thank you for calling in. Thanks for calling in, John. Catherine in Richmond agrees with you, saying last night's show was not a debate. It was an unfocused and rambling Q&A session. She also says one of your guests, Mark, pointed out that the British style of journalistic interviewing, why do moderators always have to be Americans? There's a program on the BBC called Hard Talk, and the interviewers there really ask tough, pertinent questions and keep things focused. Get one of those presenters to conduct at least one of the sessions. Well, thanks for the email, Catherine. And now I would like to welcome Ron Seifert to the show. Ron is a climate activist from Missoula, Montana, who's been working intimately with landowners along the proposed Keystone XL pipeline route. Last fall, Ron was with activist Tom Weiss on a 2,150-mile rocket trike tour from Canada to the Texas Gulf Coast in opposition to the Keystone tar sands pipeline, and he joins us from East Texas. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Ron, when I called you last night and said, can you be on, or yesterday, can you be on our show today? You said, oh, does that mean I have to watch the debate? So first, I want to say thank you for watching the debate to come on the show. What was your overall impression?
Well, certainly from an energy perspective, it's clear that Romney's camp is trying to make a discernation between themselves and Obama that Obama is not supporting enough the fossil fuel industry. But from our point of view here on the ground in East Texas, we feel quite the contrary. Last March, President Obama wrote an executive order to expedite the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline southern leg, which is in full swing as we speak, and there's a lot of folks that have come from all over the nation to try to put a stop to this disastrous construction project.
And what was your overall impression of the debate? What do you think could change to make it better?
Well, certainly I agree with some of the comments I heard coming in. It's a lot of posturing, and it's loose on so many of the subjects. It allows these candidates to simply pitch meaningless statements instead of really digging in and going toe-to-toe with some of the real issues and a long-term strategy about our goals. With energy here, clearly the short-term pandering to special interests aren't going to get us anywhere. Those of us here understand in the Keystone XL fight that regardless of temporary jobs that it might create and regardless of the short-term growth it might create. In the long term, this is going to destroy our planet. It will open the floodgates to the largest climate disaster in North America.
And Ron, just quickly, you're in East Texas. Have you heard much from anyone in your area about last night's debate and the election overall?
You know, there's been actually a lot of lackluster involvement East Texas, and that too many folks were that impressed or enthusiastic about the Romney candidacy. So accordingly, they're not too enthusiastic about the election cycle overall, of course. Additionally, Obama doesn't have much currency or much traction out here. You don't hear too many people campaigning for him either. So the presidential debate doesn't necessarily have as much purchase in East Texas as it does in some of the more highly contentious parts of the country, I would imagine.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Ron.
And my pleasure.
Yeah. And sorry for the bad line. Ron was on a cell phone. That's Ron Seifert. He's a climate activist from Missoula, Montana. He's been doing a lot of work with Keystone XL in East Texas. A number of people are blocking tractors. A lot of people are up in trees. You can find more information at the Tar Sands Blockade about what's happening with Keystone. And over the course of the next 30 minutes, we're going to check in with a few other people on the ground in Louisiana and Colorado to get their reaction to last night's debate. We'd love to hear from you. What was your reaction? What did you think about the debate? What about the questions? What would you change to make it better? What questions would you have asked? And we've got a few more debates coming up, and we'll give you those times and dates right after the break. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can post a comment to yourcallradio.org. We're joined by the nation's Mark Hertzgard and RH Reality Check's Jody Jacobson. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Call on local public radio KALW San Francisco. If you'd like to add your perspective to today's discussion or question or add a question you feel needs to be answered, please get in touch. Call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email your question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and tomorrow it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We will discuss media coverage of the presidential debate. We'll be joined by veteran journalist David K. Johnston, who will talk about coverage of the tax section of the debate. Taxes got a lot of attention last night. We'll also be joined by The Guardian's Roy Carroll to talk about the presidential election in Venezuela. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Oh, and I should mention that Ralph Nader will be joining us on Monday to talk about a wide range of issues. The email is feedback@yourcallradio.org. And today we are talking about last night's presidential debate. 60 million people tuned in to the first presidential debate. The focus was on domestic issues. There was a major focus on taxes, the economy, and health care. So what were your thoughts? What's your reaction? What would you change about the debates? And what questions would you have asked? Today we're joined by Mark Hertzgard, fellow with the New America Foundation and the nation's environmental correspondent. His latest book is Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. We're also joined by Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check, and that is an online website focusing on women's health and reproductive issues. And Mark, I just wanted you to comment on Ron's call, because he is an activist with various groups trying to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. And I know that you really care about this issue. I was hoping it would have been great for Jim Lehrer to talk about some of the people that are trying to stop the tractors that are, trying to get this route going.
I doubt very strongly that Jim Lehrer even knows about those tractors. I'm sure he's heard about the Keystone Pipeline issue, but he's going to see it from inside the Beltway perspective of, the Democrats, or at least the Obama administration, doesn't want it, and the Republicans do, and blah, 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 blah. As critical as I am of Mr. Lehrer, there's a guy up there on stage who had every opportunity to make these points, and that's Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. And, nobody can fault him himself on this. You can't do the press's job for it. I don't know. I'm just speechless. I do not understand. Well, I have some ideas on why he might have done it. All of his career, Barack Obama, for instance, from the time he was a young, ambitious politician, he has walked into an awful lot of rooms where he was the only non-white face with a lot of very powerful white people. And he always has to be very careful not to come off as the angry white, as the angry black guy. And that's probably a good part of the reason why he's bent over backwards over and over to supposedly work with the Republicans on Capitol Hill, even though they've made it very clear that they don't want to. So in that sense, it wasn't surprising that last night when Romney started laughably going after him about how he hasn't brought bipartisanship to Washington, Obama's response to that was sort of an aside about, well, you might talk to your Republican colleagues on Capitol Hill about that. That's not good enough. One of the previous callers here complained that Romney said just two or three things and kept repeating them. Well, guess what? That is what a good communicator does. And Barack Obama had every opportunity to do that last night. He didn't.
And Jody, Chris in San Francisco couldn't stand the line, but he said he really wanted Romney to be asked about his stance on abortion.
Yeah, well, I think that, this was a missed opportunity extraordinaire, because not only abortion, Romney has said that he would like to see the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And let's face it, apart from what happens in the debate, the issues here go to who chooses Supreme Court justices, how we shape law and policy around Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, women's rights. So these are profound issues here. And while I am not saying that Barack Obama is perfect on them, I'd have to say I prefer him by a long shot to Mitt Romney. So, not only was the issue of choice not brought up, which I think was just a grave mistake of strategy on the Obama campaign's part, but he failed to, and none of them really addressed the issue that, women make up the majority of people who, for example, are reliant on Social Security well into old age because of various factors, including living longer and making less and being poorer as a population later in life. They are reliant more heavily on Medicare. Romney also said that he would get rid of not only the birth control benefit, but let's face it, he also picked Paul Ryan as his running mate. And Paul Ryan has made very clear that he is anti-contraception.
Right.
So it's not just about the birth control benefit, because what the right would like to say is, oh, we don't want to really take away anyone's ability to use birth control, but that is exactly what they want to do. And so this is really a problem, I think, that the Democratic side missed a huge opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that at the second presidential debate on October 16th, it's a town hall format, they probably will have one question about this, but they probably won't have time to really go in depth.
Well, probably not. And you know what? I'll tell you something else. The pundit class inside the Beltway fails to get the fact that family planning and contraception, including, you know, also abortion, the whole reproductive rights thing, is an economic issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they start talking about, oh, the family budget and how women need to make up the family budget, guess what? How many children you have, how many children you could afford, whether you're able to choose what the timing of your next child, all of those are economic issues as much as they are issues of the heart. So, you know, women need to be able to control their fertility and to make decisions about fertility in order to participate economically and socially. And we never talk about it that way. We talk about it as though it's this side issue. Nobody cares about it. Women care very deeply about this because it is a fundamental economic issue.
And that is Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. We're also joined by Mark Hertzgard, environmental correspondent with The Nation. And we've got full line. So let's go through a few calls and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Joan in Santa Cruz. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's nice to talk to you guys. I thought that the debates last night, the questions that were asked were, I think, really appropriate and interesting. I have to say, I was so frustrated and disappointed in the way that Jim Lehrer handled the debates. Romney just got on a roll and rolled over Mr. Lehrer and consequently rolled over President Obama. And it was really disappointing because I don't think that President Obama really got the opportunity to express all the things he was saying, what his views were. It was very disappointing.
So what would you change about the debate? Just a better moderator?
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, I mean, Mr. Lehrer is very capable, but he, instead of enforcing the rules of the questions and the timing that he talked about, he just let Mr. Romney go on and on and on. And it was frustrating. It was just completely disappointing.
Mm. Well, thank you for calling in, Joan. Let's hear next from Robert in Capitola. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm working at Psychological Sciences, and my point is that these debates, such as last night, they depict how there are different kinds of intelligence, and there's quick-wittedness and being on your feet and answering questions quickly, and Romney's got that, and Obama doesn't have that, but that's not a faculty that really has a great deal of value when it comes to making policy and working in with the legislature and being a president. You know, it's unfortunate because people will be misled by a person being sharp the way Romney is, and whereas it doesn't really have much value in terms of presidential capacity.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Robert. We'll take one more call and then get some responses. Let's hear from Michael in Monterey. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Hi, I think that the main problem that we had with this debate is, I mean, they talked about it on Democracy Now!, both campaigns got together and actually went over what they would and would not talk about.
Right.
There's a big problem with that. And the thing about it is, Obama, people are saying that he was laid back. I think it's because he's been president for these last few years. You can't really exactly go up there trumping your own horn knowing that, thinking that, you know, you have someone from PBS who may ask you, well, if you're up there trumping your horn, why haven't you made good on these points? I think that's why he was hanging back. And Romney, on the other hand, went up there and kind of played, you know, the Ronald Reagan, like, I'm not going to listen to you, Jim Lehrer. I'm going to talk what I want to talk about and be extremely vague as to what I'm talking about. Kind of like Richard Nixon when he was running, saying, I have the cure-all, end-all for the Vietnam War is to win the war. Now, he never actually said what the cure was for the war, right? But I think the most tragic thing about this whole debate was at the very end of it, when it was all done and everyone was done talking about it, that the biopic film for Abraham Lincoln was more inspiring than anything these two had to say.
Well, so what about issues? I mean, what did you think about that? Because it was interesting to hear them both talk about who's going to lower taxes, and then they had, you know, very similar things to say about health care for the most part. What did you think about that?
The thing about that is it's just like for him to say, you know, Governor Romney, I've based my health care off what you did in Massachusetts.
Right.
And he's like, well, yes, but I didn't say that it was, should have been a nationalized thing when he pointedly said it, when he made it, that this is something that the country could actually look toward. But then he had to backpedal and kind of say, well, it's the thing that the country can do for itself state by state. So what you're saying is that everything you've done, the nation could adopt it, but only on a state-by-state basis.
Well, thank you for calling in, Michael. And Mark, what are your thoughts on that? Just about the substance and the issues that were actually discussed last night.
You know, there was a lot of substance there. And there was a lot of, I mean, some of the commentators later were talking about it was very wonky. And I suppose it was relative to most of what passes for political conversation on the campaign trail. But I think that, again, that Romney made a much better presentation of his point of view because he kept it relatively simpler. You know, President Obama, he got led down into these little rabbit holes of what the health board would actually do or not do and so forth. You know, and there's no reason that you can't, somebody said that the president can't defend himself, or it will sound like a braggart. That has not been a problem for other presidents in these debates, and it is. It's also, I understand when people say, "Look, we shouldn't be judging the election on these debates because it's not the same skill set as you need as a president." There's a lot of truth to that. On the other hand, for the average American person who is never going to meet these two candidates, it is these debates, if they are handled correctly by a real journalist, can give you a real sense of these two persons, how they respond under pressure, what they really think, how they engage with others. They're all the sort of the social cues that come from body language and those sorts of things. There's a lot of value in debates, potentially, if they are properly run. Last night's was not.
We have an email from Art who says, how to improve the debates? How about a panel of third-party presidential candidates and a panel of journalists who are younger and more skillful than Jim Lehrer could make the difference? The Presidential Debates Commission should not be in control. I think we also need to hold nationally broadcast radio and TV debates and discussions of significant national issues as a regular part of public discourse. Thank you for the email, Art. And today we are talking about last night's presidential debate. It was the first debate. We also have on October 11th a vice presidential debate. It'll be domestic and foreign. October 16th, second presidential debate, town hall style. So actual people will be asking the questions. October 22nd, presidential debate on foreign policy. So what did you think if you watched it last night? What do you think would make a better debate? What was missing? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by Mark Hertzgaard, environmental correspondent with The Nation magazine, and Jody Jacobson, editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. And now I would like to welcome Stephen Bailey to the show. Stephen is an activist with the Colorado Progressive Coalition. He's also with the Home Defenders League in Denver. He's involved in organizing events to help people keep their homes. He actually lost his home in North Carolina to a fraudulent foreclosure 2 years ago. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Rose.
It's nice to have you. So what did you think of last night's debate?
Well, I think not only both the candidates lost, but the American people lost as well. If they're not going to talk about the real issues, I'd rather not listen to them.
And your issue is foreclosures.
Yes, it is. It's a pretty big issue to the 15 million people who have been foreclosed on in the last, since mid-2007. It's also a big issue to the 15 million people who have homes that are underwater right now, and the 6 million people who are facing imminent foreclosure.
Stephen, what do you think would make a good debate that actually had substance and addressed some of the issues that you care about?
Well, it would have to acknowledge a lot of things that aren't being discussed. The fact that money has become so powerful in our political system
right. That
it can't even be broached. The idea that the banks committed huge crimes against the American people isn't even a real topic of discussion, even though it is what the people truly feel is going on. Until they start talking about, until they start standing up to the people who are financing these campaigns and organizing these debates, so-called debates, then we're really not going to find out what's actually going on.
And can you give us a sense, before we let you go, what are you hearing in Colorado? What are people saying about the debates and the election?
Well, there was a lot of action at the debates yesterday from a lot of activist groups. Home Defenders League and Colorado Progressive Coalition had activists out there doing some street theater about how big banks are pulling everyone underwater and how the candidates aren't addressing it. Occupy Denver had some marching on the empire, the elephant in the room. How are we supposed to be debating domestic policy issues if the candidates won't even address the fact that supporting and maintaining an American empire is dramatically reducing the amount of spending we can have at home? There's just too much that's excluded from the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson actually addressed some of those. It's time we end this two-party system and start actually broadening the conversation. The debates need to be taken back over by the League of Women's Voters. We've got to do something to bring real conversation back to this country.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Stephen, and hopefully we can check in with you again before the election to find out what's happening in Colorado.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. That is Stephen Bailey, an activist with the Colorado Progressive Coalition, also the Home Defenders League in Denver. He lost his home in North Carolina to a fraudulent foreclosure 2 years ago and now lives in Colorado. And if you'd like to join us, we've got just about 10 minutes left. 866-798-8255. We'll have a line open in just a couple of minutes. And let's hear from Colleen in Pacifica. Hi, Colleen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Well, I guess maybe I'll take a little bit of a contrary position in terms of the performance of the president, although I know that emotionally I also found myself leaning against a bit, wishing that he would be a little bit more pugilistic. But I felt that he was the one that conducted himself with much more dignity and integrity. I felt that conversely to what others have said, I think that he gave whether consciously or unconsciously, he gave Romney so much leash to expose the full scope of his prevarication. I felt, he came off as the potential liar in chief. There was almost nothing that was not massaged into factually to the point where it didn't resemble the truth at all. In fact, there was a complete, to say nothing of his body language and the mask that he had imposed on his face of that smile. He was very domineering, a my way or the highway CEO type of stance. Mm-hmm. And at the same time as he was apparently fostering this idea that people were suffering in the country and, that his job was to care for those that were burdened down by these onerous Obama policies. We know most recently that
Colleen,
a disregard for 47% of our country.
Well, thank you for calling in. A lot of people wondered why he didn't bring up the 47% or mention the word Bain last night. We actually have a listener who agrees with you, who says that Romney looked uncomfortable with a forced smile. He delivered his memorized lines. Obama seemed thoughtful, calm, and pondered about the questions before answering. After watching the debate at the San Francisco Obama headquarters, I do not think I will watch further debates. It's boring theater, and I can spend my time in better ways. Well, thank you for that email. And let's hear next from Joan in Oakland. Hi, Joan.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I wondered if you could draw a comparison between Obama's debate performance last night and his debate performances in 2008. I just can't recall how he came across when he was debating McCain. Thank you.
Thank you. Jody, do you remember how Obama did debating McCain?
Yeah, I think that,
you know, Obama was definitely more forceful and more more effectively articulated his positions in that debate, or particularly I'm thinking the one about the one that was sort of more of a roaming town hall style thing. I thought he was a much more effective at that time. I take all the points that people are making about Romney. I thought that Romney was, quite frankly, unctuous and smarmy. And that's, you know, I think he proved himself to be that. He was domineering in a way that wasn't just about the personality he presented. It was about the fact that he basically lied about many different pieces of his position and his platform. But again, I think that with respect to President Obama, while I understand and can sympathize with the idea of being presidential and not being too pugilistic, let's say, there were innumerable opportunities, I believe, including the 47% issue, Romney's tax rate, so many different areas, Medicare, where President Obama could have more forcefully and effectively articulated his position, and as someone else said, sort of delivered the knockout punch rather than continuing this campaign as it will now continue.
And Mark, what would you add to that?
Obama didn't just debate McCain in 2008. He also debated a woman named Hillary Clinton.
Right. Well.
And he was much more forceful in all of those engagements. So it just shows that, you know, it's not that he's not capable of it. He just had a really bad night last night, and it's not clear why, but you could see it from the very get-go when he made that reference to his wife, to Michelle.
Yeah, I saw
it. Very start. And here it is. It's his 20th anniversary. He's talking to the person in the world who knows him the best, and I'm sorry, it came off as cloying and false. You could see right there that he was not comfortable. And so I think with all due respect to some of the calls and the comments that have been made in the last couple of minutes, there's a little bit of people talking from inside of a pro-Obama, maybe a Bay Area bubble here. Because believe me, out there to the rest of the country, and I have family members and so forth, the Mitt Romney that came across last night was a likable person. I know that's hard for a lot of these listeners to believe. But he came across as somebody who believes in what he says and has a real plan. One last thought is that it's not, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater here. It's not that debates can't be illuminating. Think back just to earlier this election in the Republican primaries. Those debates, which had 8 or 9 different candidates on stage at a time.
Right.
Those were genuinely illuminating, partly because the candidates were going after one another and there were real journalists. Usually more than one, by the way, down in front of them, who were local journalists who were not so interested in having their face on national television and who, frankly, were not afraid to get under the skin of some of those candidates. It's not that it can't be done. We just have to organize it a little bit differently.
And some of those Republicans went after Romney harder than Obama did last night.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and let's go to another part of the country. Let's go to Louisiana. We're joined now by Sherry Foytlin. She's founder of 28 Stones, a multimedia project that focuses on the Gulf Coast. Last year, she walked from Louisiana to D.C. to raise awareness about the BP oil disaster. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. So you are in Rain, Louisiana, which is about 2.5 hours west of New Orleans. What did you think of last night's debate?
Well, I mean, frankly, whether Romney was likable or not, it really doesn't matter because he was just totally off base and out of touch with the American people, or at least from where I live. And I live in a red state. But just the idea that he kept saying over and over again that he wanted to reduce the burden of middle and high income families, really, all that leaves is low-income families, which, you know, in particular in my state, this is the second brought with poverty, second in the nation. That's us. You know, he wants us. And we pretty much already are, just feel like we are the sacrifice zone for the nation, at least as far as energy production, to which he kept pointing to and saying or leading people to believe that was going to get us out of this economic tragedy that we're in right now. I'm here to tell you it's not.
Well, and Sherry, we have just a couple minutes left, but you said something interesting when we spoke yesterday about how the people you're talking with feel like they're not connected to either candidate. What are you hearing people say today about last night's debate?
I mean, pretty much the same thing. I mean, it was blue tie versus red tie, basically, right? So from the top, this two-party system is just not serving us well anymore. It's sort of a divide-and-conquer kind of thing, and we can figure out who won or who lost, but really when it comes down to it, the people lose in this system because we really don't have representation. I mean, look at the debate itself. Only two parties were allowed to speak. Where were the rest of the candidates who are running for president in the first place? I mean, if there was real freedom out there, then all voices would be allowed to be on that stage.
And you live in a fairly traditionally conservative area, and so you're saying that a lot of those people are saying that they don't want either of these candidates.
Absolutely. Right? We don't feel like we have any choices at this point.
Well, Sherry, thank you for joining us. We'd love to connect with you again before the election. Sherry Foytlin, she walked last year from Louisiana to D.C. to raise awareness about the BP oil disaster, a tireless activist in Louisiana. Thank you, Sherry. And we have just about a minute left. Mark Hertzgard, final thoughts from you?
We have two more debates to go between these two presidential candidates. You can bet your last dollar that Barack Obama will be better prepared next time. And we'll see. Everybody has pointed out there's been a lot of things that weren't raised. For example, climate change, my beat as a reporter, which is, you know, arguably the most important question facing our civilization. That wasn't raised. But we have two more debates, and I think the more loudly the people can complain about what happened last night, the more likelihood that those next debates will be better run.
And Jody, final thoughts from you?
Completely agree with Mark. I you know, there's no way it can only go up from here. I do think that there needs to be attention to these questions that Mark has raised, including climate change, about which I'm very concerned, about women's health and rights. These things should be put on the table and discussed openly, and I hope the Democrats get a spine around this.
Jody Jacobson is editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. Mark Hertzgard is environmental correspondent with The Nation magazine. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, and thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Jour Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of the first presidential debate. We'll also talk about the presidential election in Venezuela. We'll be joined by veteran journalist David K. Johnston and The Guardian's Roy Carroll. Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.